Now that this week in global history is history, it's time to sit back, relax, and relive the week that was in global history class. Coming to you live from 235, Mr. Palumbo is ready to take you on a journey into the past to understand the present and change the future. Welcome to Enduring Issues.
Hello all, and welcome to Enduring Issues for this final week of October 2019. I'm Eric Palumbo. The theme of this week that we're going to be talking about is imperialism. We're starting the new unit on imperialism here after having our unit tests on industrialization the week prior. And this podcast is coming out a little bit late. Here it's Tuesday. I have some things after school Friday. So apologize for that. But we're going to relive last week, right? So the 20th of October through the 1st of November. And again, the theme for this unit is imperialism. And whenever in social studies we start talking about an event or a major topic or important era, we always want to go back to the beginning, the causes, the reasons why that thing is happening. And looking at imperialism and the reasons for it is what we started the week with. Now, before we're able to dive into those exact causes and reasons, we need to understand first what that term is, what imperialism means. And when it comes to these big, important terms, these terms that, you know, define an entire unit like imperialism or industrialization, it's important to have a common definition so we're all on the same page, we're all speaking the same language, if you will. So for imperialism, the definition that we came up with in class is when a more powerful nation takes over another and changes the way they live. All right, now the first part is important that we use the terms more powerful. You know, a lot of times when people talk about imperialism or colonization, they use the words larger, right? A bigger country taking over a smaller one. But I don't want us to think about geographic size having that equal power. You know, for this unit, for example, the most imperialistic nation, the one that built the largest empire, Great Britain, is a relatively small island, right? And they took over really massive swaths of land all over the world. So imperialism, again, it's a more powerful nation taking over another. And then the second part of that definition is changing the way they live. So it's not simply a military conquest. It's not simply just an invasion of occupying space or occupying territory. You know, full-blown, full-fledged imperialism is the desire of this imperialistic nation, this more powerful nation, to take over another and change their culture, change the way they live, whether it's changing their religion to match that of the mother country, to change their government structure, to change their economy, language, culture, traditions, how they teach their children. Anything like that is what we're looking at as far as imperialism, right? This idea of complete control over another area. So once we have that definition down, we need to understand that most important question in all of history, which is why? Why would these larger countries, these more powerful countries rather, go through the effort of going around the world, going to new places, encountering peoples that don't want to be taken over, don't want their culture changed? You know, why would they go through that effort? What are the reasons for imperialism? And these reasons for imperialism are ones that imperialistic countries would give for why they're doing this, right? So if you asked, you know, the leaders of Great Britain, the leaders of France or Germany, you know, why they're taking on these imperialistic undertakings, here are the things that they would say. And for this, we did an activity in class where, again, we kind of walked all over the room and had many different reasons for imperialism that we looked at. Some of the key ones, obviously, first is the desire to acquire natural resources, to acquire raw materials from around the world. So again, using Great Britain as the example, the main imperialistic nation of the time, Great Britain itself is a relatively small island, right? We looked at these things back when in industrialization. So after a time of industrialization, right, they're going to start running short on raw materials. There's going to be raw materials that they can't produce in their climate and their geography that they're going to need to look to other parts of the world to acquire, right? Lumber, cotton, silk, tea, things like that. So the ability to acquire these natural resources in other places is a reason for imperialism. The desire to gain new markets is a reason for imperialism. Again, a small place like Great Britain that's going through industrialization, you're producing all these manufactured goods. At some point, you're going to run out of customers at home, people to sell your goods and your products to. So being able to colonize another people, to be able to take over another place and force them to purchase your manufactured goods, all of a sudden you've gained yourself and your manufacturers a whole lot of new customers around the world. So the common, those economic reasons of gaining materials, gaining markets. And that economic relationship is something we've explored before. Previously, the term mercantilism is that economic relationship between the mother country and their colonies, and how we spell mercantilism, mercantilism, with all those M's at the beginning, those money, market, and materials are the reasons for that. So those are the economic reasons for imperialism. There are some social ones as well. This idea of taking over another people's and recreating them in your own image, it's what the Europeans at the time would call the white man's burden, right? That word burden, we took time in class to define. It's a difficult task, something that you must undertake, something you're not necessarily happy or thrilled with, but you see it as a duty that you must perform. So the white man's burden here is seen as those more westernized nations, the more industrialized nations, going into what we call today third world countries. Countries that are seen as less civilized in their economy, in their education, in their governmental structure, and is seen as the white man's burden, the European's duty to civilize these people. We see it in the poem, Take Up the White Man's Burden, Send Forth the Best Ye Breed, right? The White Man's Burden from Rudyard Kipling. We saw a couple different political cartoons of Europeans and Westerners literally dragging uphill folks from these other countries, from India or different countries in Africa, Asia, things like that, to illustrate this concept of a white man's burden. Social Darwinism, a new vocab term for us, is seen as a reason for imperialism. This idea that the Europeans, because of their economy, because of the way they do things, they're just superior to the rest of the world, right? The social Darwinism, we get the phrase, the survival of the fittest, which is a social studies term. It was a social studies term before it was a biological term, a biology term. So survival of the fittest, meaning the people that are smarter, better, more advanced, more innovative, are going to survive in this world struggle. And those that get taken over, it's just because they weren't as smart, weren't as innovative, right? Weren't as creative, weren't as advanced. So another reason for imperialism, right? If you ask an imperialist, why they take over this region in Africa, they would say, well, it's not because I'm a bad person. It's not because I hate these people. It's we're more advanced, right? And that's just the kind of way of nature, right? We're superior and we won, right? We won out. So those and other reasons for imperialism, it's first to understand that base of knowledge before we start getting into specific examples of imperialism around the world, right? Understanding the reasons why they're doing it. The first place that we look to gain some specifics about imperialism was Africa. We looked at the continent of Africa. We looked at a continent of Africa before imperialism, and we saw different tribal regions in Africa. And then we're able to overlay that with a new map, a map that's created in 1885 at the Berlin Conference. The Berlin Conference, this event here, something we looked at and studied, a group of European nations coming together to divide up the map of Africa in a peaceful way, just to avoid war and conflict over the different regions of Africa. They sit down in a meeting in Berlin and carve up Africa. All right, and again, the reasons for that, the reasons for what we call the scramble for Africa, why these European countries want a piece of it, is for all those reasons that we saw the day previous, the natural resources it has to offer, the new markets for products, et cetera, et cetera. The new map that gets created that we illustrated, we saw different European countries having different amounts of land spread throughout Africa. And after creating that map, we did some inferencing. We tried to predict what issues we could see from that. And for the most part, every single student in the class came up with the concept that there's going to be some conflict, right? Conflict either between European nations fighting for different pieces of land, conflicts between the natives and the Europeans, obviously, that no one wants to be taken over. No one wants to be imperialized. So we're going to see some resistance, some pushback to that. And that's exactly what we see, right? So in subsequent lessons on later on in the week, we looked at some specific conflicts that take place in Africa. We read the story of Shaka Zulu, the tribes in South Africa, and his military techniques, his ability to fight back. We looked at the Boer War. This is a conflict between European countries, fighting over different territory, fighting over resources in Southern Africa, resources particularly gold and diamonds. So this conflict between the Dutch and the British for those. And we looked at the Ethiopians in Northeast Africa fighting back and resisting the Italians taking over their region, right? So as part of the Berlin Conference, Italy was granted that area of Africa, and the natives there are going to fight back and actually gain their independence before the final map of Africa is set in 1914. So a successful resistance movement there. And this idea of resistance, this is something that, again, we've seen in different parts of the world throughout our previous learning throughout the year. And that's that really next level stuff that we're looking for you students to do, being able to connect different units together, being able to connect different parts of the world together, different time periods together, and find some commonalities between those. And as we go throughout this imperialism unit, I say it every couple of days, when we move to a different region, that I say it's, just a different chapter of the same book, right? We see the familiar pattern of an outside Western power coming in. That Western power takes control because of their advanced military and having gone through industrialization. We see them make attempts to control the native people there to varying degrees of changing their culture and trying to have an impact on those regions. And then we see this resistance movement, the native people pushing back, resisting, rebelling against those European powers, again, met with varying degrees of success, depending on the different regions. Different places we've looked at so far that we're able to make those connections to. Think about Latin America with Bolivar pushing back against the Spanish. Look at L'Ouverture in Haiti leading a slave revolt against the French there. So there's different regions and areas where we see this familiar pattern, right? And it's this idea all throughout history where humans, they don't want to be pushed around. They don't want outsiders coming in, telling them what to do, changing their culture, having an impact on their lives, right? This nationalistic, to bring that vocab word back, this nationalistic idea that people want to run their own country or their own regions, right? They'd rather have their own bad government than someone else's good one. So we're going to see, as we go throughout this imperialism unit, we're going to see this play out over and over again. So even though the region may change, the time period is roughly the same, and this desire of people not to be owned or controlled by others is going to be the same as well. To wrap up the week, so we moved away from Africa. The next region that we looked at was China. Imperialism in China. We first, again, went back and did the historical circumstances. We looked for the reasons why nations would want to gain a foothold in China, the reasons for that. And to explore that, the first major event that we looked at here was the Opium Wars. The Opium Wars. We used a video clip here to illustrate the Opium Wars and to illustrate the impact that opium, that drug, had on the Chinese and how the British weaponized opium to take over certain parts of China. So the historical circumstance, looking back at that, initially there's this trade imbalance, between China and Great Britain. Great Britain is you know, really in a rare situation on the losing end of this trade relationship. They're sending tons of money in the form of silver to China to buy tea. But China is not reciprocating. China is not buying any manufactured or finished products from Great Britain. So there's this huge trade imbalance where Great Britain is spending tons of money in China but not making any in return. The Chinese emperor is not interested in any of the British manufactured products that they have to offer. So the British need to come up with a way to find a product that they can sell to the Chinese to balance this out. And that product they come up with, they land on to sell to the Chinese is opium. The British have access to vast amounts of opium from their colony in India. The British East India Company, right, the company from England that's in control of the eastern side of India, has control over tons of opium. And this they see as their way to balance out this trade deal, right, is to get the Chinese people hooked on this drug. Now, opium's illegal in China at this time, right? As the emperor there and the previous governments have understood what opium can do to its population. So it's a banned substance there, even in the 1800s. Starting in 1729, opium is banned in China. But the British start this smuggling operation. The British East India Company begins to smuggle opium into China to get the Chinese addicted, and it works. The British end up making tons of money off of this illegal opium smuggling operation, more than enough to balance out the trade in tea. Opium becomes the largest traded commodity in the world at this time. And the Chinese emperor wants to put a stop to it. He sees what it's doing to his people. He wants to enforce these laws and regulations that outlaw opium. So they decide to put a stop to it, right? And that begins known as the Opium War, right? The Chinese try to put up a defense, but obviously the British are far more industrialized, have much better navy and troops and soldiers, and quickly rout the Chinese in this Opium War. And the treaty that comes out of it, this peace deal that's signed by the Chinese and the British to end the Opium War, the Treaty of Nanking, sometimes you see it spells the Treaty of Nanjing, is one that gets the nickname the Unequal Treaty. The Chinese just give up a tremendous amount. They're forced to pay for the war. They're forced to pay for lost profits from the British opium trade. They're forced to give up port cities. The largest, most important one of note, obviously, is Hong Kong. Is given to the British in 1841, and they're going to keep it until 1997. So other countries around the world, other industrialized nations of Western Europe, are going to see, you know, how quickly China is defeated and how much they give up in this treaty. So the eyes of the Western world are going to turn towards China, right? They're seen as a soft target. They're seen as the next place that can be easily imperialized or taken over. And that's where we left off for the week. So we kind of paused our work on China there so we could start it fresh in the week that followed. So the rest of the time in China and some other imperialized regions of the world will be our theme for the following week. We're going to move to India, and then we'll look at some Chinese imperialism, right? How they join the imperialism game and start taking over some regions in Asia. But the main takeaway here for this first week of the unit on imperialism, again, is to think about the reasons why and to think about the similarities between all these different regions, right? This concept of industrialized nation, how and why they're able to take over, why they want to take over, and then what the people do in response. All right, this issue is one that occurs throughout time, throughout regions, right? And it's one that we could certainly classify as enduring.
We hope you've enjoyed this look back into the week that was in global history. The goal, as always, is to be enlightened. If not enlightened, at least entertained. For global updates throughout the week, follow Mr. P on Twitter at Mr. P_Braves. And remember, this isn't just his story or her story. It's your story, too.